Well, brethren, we are in that dark month of December, and I thought it'd be a good time to cover why we don't keep Christmas, okay? And it's good to review that. I'm telling you, the arguments are getting clever and more clever and more clever. When you go out on the website, and most everybody will agree, hey, Christmas tree's in the Bible, it's a pagan custom, but here's all these great arguments from the Bible why it's okay. Why there's 70 other scriptures that say the green tree is great, all right? I'm not going to go through all the arguments that I read, but they are really getting clever, and they really confuse the subject. And, you know, if I was to ask you right now, why do you not keep Christmas? I would imagine the majority would say, well, it's pagan. Yeah, that's a good answer, right? You know, if it was kids, the first thing they do is, Christmas is pagan. I remember when my children used to blurt it out everywhere, you know, Christmas is pagan. Some would say, well, it's not really the birthday of Jesus. That's a correct statement too. And a few might say, well, it's just not in the Bible. And you'd probably have more arguments, and they're all correct. They're all correct statements. But I'm going to look at this from a totally different perspective today. Maybe one that you haven't thought of, or if you have, you haven't thought of it in a while. Could you imagine if somebody came up to you and said, hey, I heard you don't keep Christmas. Why is that? And you go, because I love Jesus Christ. That'd blow them away, wouldn't it? They'd probably go, I don't even understand what you're saying. So today, brethren, I'm going to say, and I'm going to show that we actually refrain from keeping Christmas because we love God. We love God, and that's why we do it. So you don't have to turn there, but in 1 John 5, verse 3, okay, for this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. So if you keep God's commandments, by his own definition, you love God. And of course, in 1 John, in the earlier chapters, I think chapter 2, it talks about how we want to abide in Christ and we want Christ to abide in us. And we do that if we keep his commandments. And of course, I'm going to keep coming back to this definition, right? That if we keep his commandments, then we love God. And so today, brethren, I'm going to be taking a look at this a little bit differently. And I've got 4 points, and those 4 points will be very obvious to you. Anyway, but we are obedient to the commands of God, and we don't keep Christmas because we ultimately love him. And anyway, don't have to turn there either, but Matthew 6, verse 24, I want you to keep this in mind throughout this whole sermon. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. So keep that in mind, and let's turn to Matthew 22, verse 34. Well, I'll pick up reading verse 34. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said, out of his own mouth, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. Of course, he goes on in verse 39, he says, the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. And of course, we who've been in the church, everyone out here has been in the church a long time. We understand that all 10 commandments hang on these two precepts, these two great commandments. The first four teaches us how to love God, right? The first four. The last six teaches us how to love our neighbor. So today, brethren, I'm going to show you that we do not keep Christmas because we love God and we keep his commandments. The 4 points that I'm going to go through, and then I'm going to have scriptures to back them up, is that I'm going to go through the first four commandments that God gives us, and I'm going to do it in reverse order, 4, 3, 2, 1, and hopefully it'll make sense when I'm done, that these are the reasons why we don't keep Christmas. Oh yeah, we can argue paganism, that's fact. We can argue it's not in the Bible. We're going to prove that today. But in the end, you cannot serve two masters. You either obey Christ or you don't. Okay, so fourth commandment, point number one. I'm going to read it in its entirety. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son nor your daughter, nor your male servant nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and he rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he hallowed it. So not only did he set it apart from the rest of the week, he made it holy, and he rested from his work. And in Hebrews, when it talks about how we need to abide in his rest, then we abide in his rest as we're doing today. We're keeping his Sabbath holy. Now, coupled with the seventh day is the seven annual Sabbath days. Okay? Now, before I go to Leviticus chapter 23, I want you to remember that in, let's go back to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2, I'll just reiterate that because I hope that I can make this point very clear. Anyway, in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 1, he says, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished, and on the seventh day God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." Now, coupled with that is the appointed seasons. Now, going back to Genesis chapter 1, it wasn't until the fourth day that God actually created time. Let's go and let's look at this. Time means nothing to God. In fact, we know that 1,000 years is like one day. So let's look at where he created time for us to keep his appointed seasons. And that was the reason why he did it. So in verse 14, God said, "Let there be light in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years." And when you look in the Hebrew, this says appointed times. And remember that, appointed times. Verse 15, he said, "Let there be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light on the earth, and it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night." So now he's putting the sun back where it's supposed to be, the moon back where it's supposed to be, and all the rotations that take place that we get the 24-hour day, and in the Hebrew, 12 months, 360 days. Of course, we have the Gregorian now, which has made it a little tighter. But anyway, this is how God designed it. Let's finish out 16. He said, "The lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and divide the light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day." My point here is that this was when he created time for us to know to keep his appointed times or appointed seasons. Let's turn to Leviticus chapter 23. And now I'm going to wrap this point up and bring it home, I hope. Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 1. "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, The feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." Okay, those are his appointed times. Now, what's interesting here, look at this. He's now explaining the holy convocations and the holy feasts. And he starts with, guess what? The seventh day of the week. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath, a solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Verse 4, "These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times." Okay? Now, he already set that on the fourth day from the beginning of creation, the creation week. And then he goes through, and we're not going to read the rest of this, but on verse 5, he says, 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. On the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Then he goes on to the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Trumpets, Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, and then the last great day. Here's my point. God created time so that you and I would know exactly when to worship him at his appointed times. Seventh day, every week, 52 weeks of the year, and then seven times throughout the year. Not once in all of his appointed times in his appointed seasons. Not once from Genesis to the book of Revelation does it say to you to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. Because, brethren, that is what Christmas is. It is nothing other than the origin of the birthday. It's the birthday of the sun, originally. Then it became known as the birthday of Tammuz on December 25th, which in the Hebrew is Nimrod. It then transferred to Egypt under the guise of Osiris and Horus, which were also born on December 25th. And, of course, they were all born by a virgin. Now, if we go deeper into Christmas, you'll find that these guys were born of this miraculous birth of an Adonis, and this green tree sprung out of a Yule log. Now, I'm not going to get into a lot of the nitty-gritty today about the paganism of Christmas, but my point here is, remember when we said it's not in the Bible? Guess what? It's not in the Bible. God's appointed times are in the Bible, but Christmas is not in the Bible. And you would think that if God wanted us to celebrate the birthday of His Son, the Messiah, it would have been one of the holy days, one of the appointed times. It is not. Okay, again, you either keep God's appointed times or you keep the traditions of men. Remember, we cannot serve two masters. And again, I always say, why would God leave out the most important time and season that we hear about right now in this month? Remember, you know, Jesus is the reason for the season. I hear that all the time. You know, it's His birthday. We've got to celebrate His birth. And yet, it's not one of God's appointed seasons. And it's the same Jesus that walked on the earth that created the appointed times, as we know in the book of John. All right, the second point. We will start with the third commandment. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. That is the third commandment of how to love God. You want to know how to love Jesus? Keep the third commandment. Now, we know, you know, when I was taught as a young kid that we're not to take God's name in vain in any form, and usually people like to curse, and I'm definitely not going to say what they say, but you know what I'm talking about. When they curse, they take the Lord's name in vain. OMG is just another way of taking God's name in vain, and that's done on a second-by-second basis all over the world. Okay, people who aren't even Christian use that term, don't even know. So they're totally flippant and taking it in vain. You can take God's name in vain if you swear an oath in His name and you don't keep it or don't plan to keep it. That's another way that you can take His name in vain. Now I'm going to tell you another way, which is the point that I'm driving at here, if you want to take His name in vain. And that is invoke the name of God and apply it to a tradition of man that He is not involved with at all. That is another way to take His name in vain. And they do it every day during the Christmas season, don't they? Where they're applying our Messiah, who basically says in this Bible, don't do the way of the heathen, don't do the way of the Gentile, and yet they apply it to these pagan traditions of men. So when you invoke the name of God in vain, you are held guilty. That's what this says. There are slogans that are always invoking the name. You know, Jesus is the reason for the season. That's a nice slogan that they say. Another one is, and this is hotly debated even within the Christian world, well, we need to put Christ back into Christmas, right? Now, I'm going to read an article. This was written by an American Catholic priest, and he says why putting Christ back in Christmas is not enough. Now, he goes through the history of America and how Christmas came about in America. And ultimately, the bottom line is that if you keep Christmas the American way, then you just are not getting it because it's just totally not the way Christmas was designed. You know, he even talks about Charles Dickens and how Charles Dickens, it wasn't about, you know, the miracle of Christ. It was more about the miracle of Christmas. But he talks about why in America that the way we keep Christmas, you know, the Americans keep Christmas, is incorrect. Okay? So I'm just going to read a few of these things because he goes into the history. He says, around the middle of the 17th century, Puritan leaders in the New England made the celebration of Christmas illegal. Most Americans don't even know that. Most Americans don't even know that on the books, even today, the law says that Congress is supposed to meet on Christmas Day. He said they did this for two specific reasons. For one, the Feast of Christmas, that's what he calls it, the Feast of Christmas, involved a great deal of intemperate behavior. During these long winter nights, people feasted in excess, got drunk, engaged in wanton sex, rioted in the streets, and barged into the homes of well-to-do and demanded that they be given the best of the pantry. And that's where, when you really get down into Christmas and this idea that you give birthday gifts to the birthday kid, is coming from this old pagan idea that if you were poor, you could get gifts from those that were rich. And there's a lot of stuff that, and of course, all cultures change it a little bit, and all time periods, you know, do different types, but they're all coming from this basic idea. Candles on cakes for birthdays. That's where you get the Christmas lights on trees, okay? The lights, the sweets. Why do you give a birthday cake to a birthday person? Well, because in ancient times, that was the one time of the year they got what they called pastries. You know, they got their little sweet cakes. So there's, again, as I go, Christmas is the origin of the birthday. And it's all linked together. And again, December 25th is the ultimate birthday. It's the ultimate birthday party. Anyway, he goes on to say, they barged in the homes, okay, and they demanded their gifts, what they were due. Another reason the Puritans banned Christmas is that it smelled too much of popish ceremonies. For them, the Roman Catholic Church, Mass of Christ, and that is what Christmas is, people who keep Christmas and aren't even Catholic don't even realize it's Roman. It's the Mass of Christ. They ultimately, in my opinion, I could be wrong, and for those that know better, they actually link the nativity of Christ with the death of Christ all in one ceremony, and ultimately leads to a mixture of what we would call the Passover, is their Mass. And another thing that they do, which is, unless you've seen it, it's bizarre, they actually sacrifice, the way I got it, they actually sacrifice Christ every Mass, over and over and over and over. The one I went to, which was a high Mass, it was a funeral, they built the altar, and boy, I was looking, I couldn't see what they were building, but I wanted to see what they were building. But he kept saying, I'm building the altar, right? And then they would crucify Christ, and then they would hand out the bread and the wine. And of course, I didn't take part in that portion of it, but they do that at every Mass. And of course, Christ Mass is that ultimate Mass. And again, I didn't grow up Catholic. I only went to one Catholic ceremony in my entire life, what little I've studied about it. So I may get some things a little bit wrong there, but that's how I interpreted it when I went to this funeral. All right, so it says the Roman Catholic Mass of Christ contravened the requirements to worship only as the Bible had explicitly commanded. As Jerry Bowler in Christmas in the Crosshair observes, the only day to be kept holy, the Puritans asserted, was the Sabbath. Now, the early Puritans in America were Sunday-keeping pilgrims, okay? Yes, there probably was in Holland, around the time of the Mayflower, some Sabbath-keeping Christians that were intermingled with them. But for all intents and purposes, when you read about the early American Puritans, the Sabbath that they talked about was Sunday. Because every document that you can read says that they were plowing the field on Saturday and they would rest on Sunday. The real church didn't come to America until a little while later, to Newport, Rhode Island. But what I'm saying here is, even the Puritans understood this. They understood that the Sabbath was the only day to worship, as I read in the first point, right? And that this was a man-made pagan holiday. Okay, one public notice warned its citizens, this is early America, the observation of Christmas having been deemed a sacrilege, the exchanging of gifts and greetings, dressing in fine clothing, feasting and similar satanical practices are hereby forbidden, with the offender liable to a fine of 5 shillings. Anyway, he goes on to say that because of the Puritan influence on this particular religious holiday, the United States Congress regularly met on Christmas Day from 1789 to 1855. Public schools met on Christmas Day in Boston until 1870. The first state to legalize the celebration of Christmas was Alabama in 1836. early American history was anti-Christmas because they did have certain truths, even though they didn't fully understand it, they did understand the paganism that backed Christmas. Anyway, this article continues to say, and remember, this is an American Catholic priest saying, this is why you can't really put Christ back into Christmas in America. Okay, it was what the whole article was about. But the article says Christmas was brought to America by politics, myths, commercialization, and the secularization of St. Nick. In fact, he kind of gets on to him for even bringing St. Nick into this. You know, he's basically saying they're taking this man's achievements and basically paganizing him a little bit. Anyway, and that's why he says you can't really put Christ back into the American Christmas. And he goes on to say they really need to be keeping the nativity and then the mass of Christ, like they do. So you can see that in early America, we understood that Christmas was not something to be kept. In fact, as I said, they called it satanical. They called it sacrilege. All right, so let's go on. Again, in this, when they invoke Christ's name, connect it to Christmas, they are literally taking his name in vain. Let's look at Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7, and we'll read verses 1 through 9. Then the Pharisees and some of the scribes came together to him, having come from Jerusalem. Now when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled, that is, with unwashed hands, they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding the tradition of the elders. When they came from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash, and there are many other things which they have received and hold, like the washing of cups, pitchers, copper vessels, and couches. Then the Pharisees and scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands?" Christ answered and said, "Well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites? As it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.'" Verse 8, "For laying aside the commandments of God, you hold the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups, and many other things that you do." And he said to them, "All too well, you reject the commandment of God that you may keep your tradition." Now that's what Christ was dealing with the Jews of his day. And honestly, Judaism today is Pharisaism. They finally won the war with all the sects. Took them several hundred years, but they finally did it. And what you have today in Judaism is all these traditions of their elders. In fact, I've stated many times, a lot of people, I mean, really, is something that needs to be understood. Judaism has nothing to do with this book. Okay? I mean, yes, they have some things in common, like the Sabbath and certain of the holy days. And yes, Judaism has Jewish people. Doesn't have to always be Jewish people, but they do. Same way with Christianity. And I'm talking about traditional Christianity, has some things in common with this book, right? But they don't teach the commandments of God. They don't keep them. Anyway, if Christ returned right now and he was meeting people out in the street talking about Christmas, he would say the same thing. You're laying aside the commandments of God for your own traditions. It's the same thing. And so in vain they worship me, teaching the doctrines, the commandments of men. And again, what did I say? You can't have two masters. You either keep God's commandments or you keep the traditions of men. There's no in between. So the third point is the second commandment. Now this one I'm not going to spend a lot of time on because we all understand this one very well. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them, nor observe them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. Now let's go a little further with this. Finishing verse 6, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. God's own definition. Those that hate him, he visits the iniquity of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. For those that love me and keep my commandments, he gives mercy to. Now, the Catholic Church resolved this issue a long time ago. They just did away with this commandment, threw it out the door. There is no such thing as this commandment if you read the Catholic Ten Commandments. They take, I think, the ninth one and break it up into two, if I remember right. Let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 10, because one thing you know about Christmas is it's full of imagery. Now, here's the funny thing. I grew up looking at dictionaries, and when you looked up the word venerate, in all the old dictionaries, it says to worship. You won't find that today. I looked up at least six or seven dictionaries just this morning, and venerate, you see, Catholics say, we don't worship the tree, we venerate it. We don't worship the cross, we venerate it. We venerate Mother Mary, but we adore God. And that's how they put it. Well, venerate now just means to honor, highly esteem. But when I grew up, the definition of venerate was simply to worship. A lot of changes in our definitions. And that's the clever argument that they have now, is we don't worship these things, you know, as they're bowing down and kissing them. So let's look at Jeremiah. This one, everybody, there's very few, if you go out on the net and you look this up, very few argue this. Catholics agree, this is a Christmas tree. Protestants agree, this is a Christmas tree. Now, they'll tell you a lot of other clever arguments of why it's okay to have a Christmas tree. But they all agree that in this particular passage, Jeremiah 10, verse 1, that this truly is what we would say is a modern-day Christmas tree. Now, let's read it. It says, verse 1, hear the word which the Lord speaks to you, O house of Israel. Thus says the Lord, do not learn the way of the Gentile. Now, I'm going to say this. You can't do something unless you learn about it. Think about that. Now, once you learn how to do something, then you can do it. Because that's one of the arguments, is they say, well, he's saying don't learn about it. You know, he's not really saying that you can't practice it. I'm like, well, if you never learn it, never even know it exists. But anyway, do not learn the way of the Gentile, or the old King James says, the heathen. Do not be dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the Gentiles are dismayed at them. For the customs, custom means tradition, for the customs of the people are futile. For one cuts a tree from the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with the axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it with nails and hammers so that it will not topple. They are upright like a palm tree. They cannot speak. They must be carried because they cannot go by themselves. He says, don't be afraid of them because they can't do evil to you. And, you know, we got a Christmas tree right back there. We're holding services. That tree can't hurt us in any one shape or form, right? But they cannot do any good. Anyway, what's interesting, when you continue reading, now we just read about this tree that they cut down from the forest, they fastened it. I remember telling somebody that we were talking about this, they go, that's not a Christmas tree. I buy mine. Mine's plastic. Exactly. And then I also hear, you know, well, I don't understand the nails and the wood. Well, guess what? 60 years ago, I don't know if they had pedestals for trees. I don't know, but they used to have to fasten them with their own way. Now you just go and you buy, you know, a plastic tree, you know, it's got a base on it. I was watching Good Morning America one day this week, and they did say, they still said, the best tree is one cut from the forest. And that's the best tree that you have. Now, if you have to get a plastic one, and they'll go ahead and get the plastic one. Well, guess what? They now make stands, and you just step them in there, and you don't have to use hammers or nails. But for those who are serious about history, they read this scripture, and they go, yeah, that's a Christmas tree. You know, we don't put gold and silver on them today, unless you're rich. We put these little streamers on that are gold and silver, right? I mean, it's very obvious of what this is. But if you continue reading, then God continues to say, he says, but the Lord is the true God. He is the living God, the everlasting King. At his wrath, the earth will tremble and the nations will not be able to abide in his indignation. I find it interesting that that's coupled with this passage of this Gentile way of life, which I'm getting ready to go to the next point. So my final and fourth point is the first commandment. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Because when you study that Christmas tree, you start getting into other foreign gods, if you really get into it and get into the history of it. Now, have you ever wondered why this commandment is the way it is? He says, I brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Well, we always have known that Egypt was a type of sin. And whenever I'm reading this, You know, the next thing I'm thinking of is they start sinning in and they build a molded calf, right? And they said, this is your God. But he says, I'm taking you out of the house of bondage, right? You shall have no other gods before me. Now, as you study more about Egypt, Egypt is known as the land of the gods. And it always has been. They had over 2,000 deities. And when you study Egypt, not today, today it's Islamic, but back in the day, which was before my time, they had over 2,000 deities, and they had no trouble adding even more. I mean, now you can see why God says, have no other gods before me, and I just took you out of the house of bondage, right? Because we know that in Romans 6, verse 20, you're either a slave to sin or you're a slave to God. And so we got to keep that in mind, that here he's bringing him out of the land of the gods, out of bondage, out of sin, and then he says, you shall have no other gods before me, because I'm a jealous God. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 64. It says here, then the Lord will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other, and then you shall serve other gods, which neither you nor your father have known, wood and stone. And brethren, that really is true even today. All these other gods, all these other images are made of wood and stone. Now, you could argue, just like you can with the Christmas tree, well, you know, my cross is made out of metal. Okay, but think about it. How many crosses have you seen that were wood? How many have been studded with gemstones? Think of monuments, the Washington Monument, made out of granite. I mean, honestly, when it says here, foreign gods, they're always tied to some sort of wood, metal, you know, man-made type of article, you know. Anyway, he says, and this is what's also interesting in verse 65, he said, among those nations you shall find no rest. So back to Christmas, I've tried showing you that in four commandments, all four of the commandments teaches you how to love God, Christmas violates it in one form or the other. One form or the other. And again, we can't serve two masters. We either love Jesus or we don't. So the next time somebody says, hey, why don't you keep Christmas? Why don't you try it out? And say, well, that's because I love Jesus. But the truth is, we do love God. We do keep his commandments. We are obedient to his appointed seasons, not men's seasons, not their traditions. And that was kind of the point that I wanted to make today. And that's how we love him, because we don't keep Christmas.